Good morning. Today's daf in Shabbos Tzadi Zion. Yesterday we started the 11th parak of the Masechta, and this parak is really dedicated to the Malach of Hotzah. Now, as we already discussed yesterday, so was the 8th parak and 9th parak and 10th parak, and the end of the 7th parak as well. And we opened up the Masechta, we also talked about Hotzah, but this parak really is going to be dedicated to the analysis of the Malacha in of itself. Previous parak, 10th parak, we were talking more globally, more generally, about principles of two people being involved in the Malacha, and we talked about Kala Achar Yad. Going back to the 8th parak, we were really stuck on the details regarding the Shir Hotza'ah, 9th parak. 8th parak as well. 8th parak and 9th parak, we were stuck on the details of the Shir Hotza'ah, what exactly, how much you have to take of each item. But this parak is really dedicated to analyzing the Malacha in of itself. And in yesterday's daf, we learned the opening Mishnah of the Masechta, we spoke about going from Irishus Yachit to Rishus Rabim, and we identified that as Hotza'ah, which is the Av Malacha. We went in the other direction, going from the Rishus Harabim back into the Rishus Yachid. That is a Tolada, the subcategory of what's called Hachnasa. We talked about being Mavir Dala Amos Rishus Rabim, transporting something for Amos in Rishus Rabim. We spoke about Zrika, throwing an item, which that too would be chayv as well. And we also introduced ourselves yesterday to the to a version of Hotza'ah called Moshit, where there I'm passing an item from one Rishus Yachid to another Rishus Yachid through Rishus Rabim, but that one is very specific, where there I have to be transferring the item to a Rishus Yachid that's on the same side of the street. So in other words, two balconies that are not facing one another, that are side by side, and they are over a Rishus Rabim, then and only under those circumstances, then only if I pass the item, am I involved in the halach of Hoshata. And the reason why Hoshata is so specific is because it has to model itself exactly the way it was done in the Mishkan, in terms of the beams being passed from one wagon to another wagon. And we briefly described that yesterday in the Mishnah, and yesterday in the Gemara, so we went through the sources of where all this comes from. What is the sourcing of the Malacha of Hotza'ah? And as we went over Tosfos yesterday, and it's a really fundamental Tosfos regarding the Malacha of Hotza'ah, why is the Gemara spending so much time trying to cite the source of the Malacha of Hotza'ah? The Gemara does not do that by any other Malacha. The other Malachas are Halacha Moshe Misinai. And yet when it comes to Hotza'ah, we spend so much time trying to find out a source in the Torah. And so Tosfos says this is connected to the idea that Tosfos himself presented in the beginning of the Masechta, that the Malacha of Hotza'ah is a Malacha Gerua. And since it's quote-unquote this inferior HaMalacha, and we spent time yesterday discussing exactly what that means, but because it is inferior in nature, so therefore the Gemara is searching so desperately to find a source in the Torah that speaks to this Malacha and helps us shape and guide exactly what this Malacha looks like. On top of all that, yesterday, we got onto the topic of Mekosha Shetzim. The end of Parsha Shlach, the Torah there, describes an individual's Mechal Shabbos. Midrashim speak about what his motivation was, but the Pesukim themselves just simply describe him being Mechal Shabbos. And even the Pesukim are not that forthcoming in terms of what exactly he did. The Torah just simply describes him as being a Mekosha Shetzim. Now, we in our mind automatically assume that that means that he was gathering wood, but that's not really clear in the Pesukim. And as we learned yesterday, there are three different interpretations of exactly what he did. The Gemara, one of the opinions in the Gemara is that he was Mavir Abramus, Rishus Rabim. He took an item and he transported four Amos in Rishus Rabim. The Gemara had another opinion, which is Tolesh. He uprooted the wood. And the third opinion is the one Mamir, where he gathered, which is the one which is the most popular. What is the significance of knowing exactly what he did? So the Gemara discussed that yesterday. We discussed that at the end of yesterday's daf. Tanur Rabbanu, now in the Gemara, we're able to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. We're on the bottom of Tzadi Vav Amud Beis, and we are at the two dots, and we are going to be discussing a little bit more regarding the Mekoshesh. Tanur Rabbanu, Mekoshesh Zed Flavchad. So the Braisa quotes an opinion that we're identifying now who the Mekoshesh is, meaning we don't know who he is in the Torah itself. And meanwhile, the Braisa says that it's connected to Slavcha. They find an individual. That's all the Torah says regarding the Mekoshesh. Ulahalan Omer Avinu Meis Bamidbar. And the Pesukim later on describe how the Benot Slavchad say to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, our father died in the desert. Now, this idea that that they say that our father died in the desert, so the Gemara's understanding is that an unusual death, meaning obviously everybody died in the desert, but by them stating that their father died in the desert, they mean in under unusual circumstances. And so the Gemara therefore is asserting that the description of the Bnei Sachar is a description of their father dying through the action of being the Mekoshesh. And this is how Rabbi Akiva now constructs the puzzle, the riddle of who is the Mekoshesh. So Amar lo Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra Akiva ben kach ben kach asli tenas adin. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra speaks to Rabbi Akiva and quite harshly to Rabbi Akiva, and he says, "Look, you're going to have to answer for this. You identifying who the Mekoshesh is not only unnecessary, but it's problematic." The Torah went out of its way to not disclose to us who his identity, and meanwhile, that's he did, and that's under the best circumstances. That's if you're right. Now, if you're not right, so now you're speaking poorly about somebody who has you have no right to speak poorly about. So the Elam, so the Gemara says, okay. Now, as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, what would be his defense? Hagamar Gzera Shava. So the Gemara says he learns a Gzera Shava. And Rashi over here, the top Rashi in the Amud, he writes, V'im kein lo kisisa atara, da'avle kemafurash. Once we have a Gzera Shava connecting the two, so then this is not the Torah covering up. This is the Torah being forthright. This is the idea that a Gzera Shava is not just finding a word here, finding a word there. If you have a Gzera Shava that connects to Pesukim, so it's as if the Torah is really spelling it out. So the Gemara says Zereshava lo gamar. So the Gemara says, okay, the obviously Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra did not hold of the Zereshava, and Rashi over here cites the rule that when it comes to Zereshava, ein adam dan Zereshava me'atzma. A person cannot make Zereshava on his own. A person has to have a mesor with Zereshava. So over here now we get to the somewhat awkward position where Rabbi Kiva somehow had the mesor this Zereshava, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra did not have the Mesorah of this Gzera Shava. And so it takes some work in order to understand how it could be that Gzera Shavas, which are Mesorah based, and everyone agrees that's Mesorah based when it comes to Gzera Shavas, how could there be any kind of discrepancy between some having the Gzera Shava and some not? So the Gemara says, Ela mehacha hava. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to learn from here. Vayafilu. Vayafilu. So Vayafilu is a reference to Parsha Shlach, where there. Parsha Shlach. Right the first time, where there there was a group of people after the Chet Hamiraglim who and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that you're not going to go to Eretz Yisrael and you're going to be spending 40 years in the Midbar. There was a group of people who wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, and they insisted on going even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu's instructions were not now. So according to Rav Yehuda, that is the death of Tzlavchad, and it has nothing to do with the Mekoshesh. And he just simply, well, he had a particular love for Eretz Yisrael, although his love for Eretz Yisrael had him going to Eretz Yisrael at an inappropriate time. But that's the death of Tzlavchad, and has nothing to do with being with the Mekoshesh. Kayot b'davar ata omer. Now a similar discussion, and it goes like this: Vayichar afa Hashem ban, vayelach. So at the end of Parshas Baloscha, so Akash Baruch Hu gets angry, and then Akash Baruch Hu goes. This is a reference to the incident where Aaron and Miriam are speaking Lashon Hara about their brother Moshe, and Malamichaf Aaron and Sarah. And now, who got Tzaras? So we know for sure that Miriam got Tzaras. The Jewish people waited for the Tzaras of Miriam to clear. So we know that Miriam got Tzaras. Moshe davens on behalf of Miriam. The Pesukim are clear that Miriam got Tzaras. Did Aaron get Tzaras as well? So Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion that Aaron got Tzaras as well. So Divrei Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion that both Miriam and Aaron got Tzaras. If you look carefully at the Pesukim, Vayichar af Hashem, bam. Kadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at them. And so the indication is that not just at Miriam, but at Aaron as well. And Aaron also suffered from Tzaras. Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, Akiva ben Kach, v'kenchaas, li tenas adin. And here we go now into the same dialogue where Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra says, you're not going to win in either event. If in fact you're right, the Torah looked to cover up the fact that Aaron got saras, and you're now uncovering it. And if you're wrong, so now you're speaking poorly about a tzaddik. Now it's true that the Torah says the word bam, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was upset with them, but that all that means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was upset with them. The nezifa, the anger that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had, so that was both at Aaron and Miriam. And for reasons, for the specific reasons, which I don't have an explanation for right now, in terms of why Miriam suffered the saras and Aaron didn't, but in terms of the bam, that's just referencing the nezifa. Tanya Kamanda Amar Av Aaron and Nitzara, we do have a brisa that also supporting this position that Aaron also suffered from saras tichsiv vayifen Aaron el Miriam vihine mitzaras. The pasuk says that Aaron turned to Miriam and she had saras. So Tana shepina mitzaraso. And the word pina means to turn, but the Gemara's understanding, the brisa's understanding, is that Aaron basically had his saras move over to Miriam. Shepana mitzaraso. And he was cleared of his own saras. So in other words, momentarily, Aaron had saras. When somebody suspects another person of doing something, and and that suspicion is unfounded, so the person who is suspicious, so he himself is going to be suffering in his body. The pasuk says, "Vehin lo yaminuli." Hakadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, "You must speak to the Jewish people." And Moshe says, "They're not going to believe me." So Moshe Rabbeinu was choshev b'ksheirim. He suspected that the Jewish people were not going to believe him. So Vigalia kamei kodesh baruch hu demehamne Yisrael. Now Kodesh Baruch Hu, of course, knew that the Jewish people were going to have emunah. Amar lo hein ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. So he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, let me explain to you about the Jewish people. They're believers and they're the children of believers. Ve'atayin sof chala amin. The person who's going to have issues with emunah is going to be you. Now Kodesh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, hey ma'aminim dichsi vayomar ha'am b'nei ma'aminim. Ve'emin b'Hashem. So the Pesukim speak very clearly that the Jewish people were ma'aminim, they believed. And meanwhile, Moshe, by the Sela, so you did not have enough emuna in me. And how do I know that Moshe also had to suffer in terms of his physical body? The pasuk says, so he says that one of the simanim, one of the oaths that Moshe showed Paro was when he put his hand into his coat and he took it out, so it had saras. Now the reason why he had saras is because it was choshev b'ksherim. When it comes to a good measure, it comes quicker than that of mida paranios. When it comes to tragedy, so he put his hand in and he took it out, and then his hand had saras. So in terms of Moshe obtaining the saras, that's only when the hand comes out of his shirt. But meanwhile, when it comes to the tova, when it comes to the good and the healing, so he puts his hand in the shirt, and the moment that he puts his hand in the shirt, he's relieved from the saras. And now the Gemara just over here, just as a small little addendum, adds another pasuk over there by the episode of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Aaron's mata now is swallowing the mata of the chartumim. So I'm Rebbe Lazar Neis Besoch Neis. So Rebbe Lazar says that it was a miracle within a miracle. What exactly is the Gemara making reference to when it says Neis Besoch Neis? So you could take a look at Rashi over here, fourth line down. He writes La'achas shechazav v'nasa mata bal'am v'lo kishu tanin d'loksi v'yivla tanin Aaron. So Rashi explaining the double miracle says that first what happens is that the snake turns back into a staff, and then the staff goes ahead and consumes the staffs of the chartumim. So that is the neis betoch neis according to Rashi. A little bit difficult to understand within the Shita of Rashi, how is it neis besoch neis? It's a miracle within a miracle, as is the language of the Gemara. We are now ready to continue. We are about a third of the way down on Sadi Zayin Amud Aleph. And the Gemara now is going to be discussing our Mishnah and trying to give definition to the Mishnah. You look back at the Mishnah, and what you will note is that the Mishnah brought down the basics regarding the Malachas of Avsa. The Mishnah talked about being Zorek, throwing from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid, and then the Mishnah described the following scenario. You're throwing from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid with the Rishus HaRabim in the middle. So basically, from one house to another house with the street in the middle. Rabbi Kiva Mechai v'Chacham in Pochim. So then Rabbi Kiva says that your Chayv and the Chachamim say that you are going to be Potter. Now within this machlokus over here between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, so where exactly are we? And the Gemara now is going to explain what they are debating, what's the case of the debating, and what are the fundamental issues that are being debated. By Rabbi, so Rabbi now asks this as a question. Lamata me'asara pligi? Perhaps what they're arguing about is the following. The throw, it was a line drive. It went from the house and it went through the Rishus HaRabim. And it went under 10 Tfachim, meaning to say that it went through the Rishus HaRabim. As we already established in yesterday's daf, and we said this in the beginning of the Masechta, a Rishus HaRabim is a street, but halachically, its ceiling only goes up 10 Tfachim high. Meaning above Rishus HaRabim, above 10 Tfachim in a Rishus HaRabim, does not have the status of Rishus HaRabim. It's a Makom Pater. We already discussed previously what happens if I'm walking through the Rishus HaRabim and I'm holding the item, right? 10 Tfachim high is approximately 3 feet off the ground. And so I'm walking through the Rishus HaRabim and I'm holding an item above 10 Tfachim, which is possible. So would one be liable? The answer, as we pointed out, is yes, because obviously you're holding the item and you're walking through the Rishus HaRabim, so it's as if the item is in the Rishus HaRabim. But we know that the ceiling of the Rishus HaRabim is 10 Tfachim. So according to Rabbah, here's one possible scenario. When you threw the item from one Rishus HaYachid to another, through the Rishus HaRabim, and through the airspace of the Rishus HaRabim. Now, what then is the debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim? Muvah HaPligi. Mar Savar Amrinan Kluta Kimi Shehuncha Damya, Umar Savar Lower Amrinan Kluta Kimi Shehuncha. And the question now becomes the following. When I'm throwing through the Rishus HaRabim, so although it didn't stop in the Rishus HaRabim, does the Halacha allow us to say that because it was in the airspace of the Rishus HaRabim, it's kimi shehuncha. It's as if it stopped and was situated within the Rishus HaRabim. This principle of kluta kimi shehuncha, basically what it allows us to do is say that even though the item is in motion, the halacha is able to freeze frame that item while in the Rishus HaRabim, and therefore one is going to be in violation of both the malacha of hotza'ah, going from the Rishus HaYachid to the Rishus HaRabim, even though the item physically didn't stop, but the halacha views it as if it stopped, and then it went from the Rishus HaRabim into the Rishus HaYachid, so that would be the malacha of Achnasa. So that's one possibility, and that would be the shita of Rabbi Akiva. On the other hand, what the Chachamim is saying is that no, that they fundamentally disagree with this principle of kluta kemishahuncha. And therefore, according to the Chachamim, you did not stop in the Rishus HaRabim, and so ultimately all you did is have the Akira start off in the Rishus HaYachid, the Hanacha end off in the Rishus HaYachid, and it didn't stop in the Rishus HaRabim. Avalamala me'asara, but let's say, for example, if this is the right way to understand the Machlokas, let's say you threw it as a lob, where it went above 10 Tfachim in the Rishus HaRabim. Divrei Hakol Pater, everyone would say that it would be Pater. And we're not going to learn out the malach of Zarek from the malach of Moshit. As we already established in yesterday's daf, the malach of Moshit is, let's break it down. I'm taking an item, I'm starting with it in a Rishus HaYachid. I'm passing it over a Rishus HaRabim, and we're assuming that the balconies are above 10 Tfachim, which is a safe assumption. I'm passing it over a Rishus HaRabim into another balcony. And so the malach of Moshit is basically where I start in Rishus HaYachid, end in a Rishus HaYachid, go through Rishus HaRabim, but going over the Rishus HaRabim. So if the Malacha of Zorek was to be compared to the Malacha of Moshit, one would say that if Moshit, one would be liable, so in the case of Zorek, where I'm throwing it above 10 Tfachim, I'm going to be liable. By virtue of the fact that the debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim is only Besoch Asara, but above 10 there's no debate, so that means to say that they both are going to be in agreement that the Malacha of Zorek cannot be learned from the Malacha of Moshit, and therefore one is not going to be liable if one threw it above 10. So this is one way to how to understand the Machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. The Gemara says, but we could say it another way as well. Odim lamala me'asara pligi. Maybe they're arguing where I threw the item above 10 Tfachim. I threw it more like a lob. Uvaha pligi, the Marzav Yafin and Zorek me'moshit, the Marzav Yafin and Zorek me'moshit. And the debate now is going to be whether or not we're going to learn out the Malacha of Zorek from the Malacha of Moshit. But below 10, Divrei Hakol Chayiv. Everyone's going to say that you're going to be Chayiv, meaning everyone is in agreement with the idea of Kluta Kemishin Shoncha. My Taima, Kluta Kemishin Shoncha Damya. So this is another way to see the Machlokis. So what Rava is now wondering, asking, is the Machlokis between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim in the Mishnah just simply a function of whether or not we say Kluta at all? Rabbi Kiva says we do, and the Chachamim say we don't. Or possibly, they both agree to the principle of Kluta Kemishon and Chadamya. The case in the Mishnah is where I threw it above 10 Tzvachim. And the question now is, can I compare the Malach of Zarek to that of Moshit? Moshit is almost identical, but the notable difference is that I'm passing the item, I'm not throwing the item. Also, it has to be that I'm passing it to a balcony that's on the same side of the street. Over here, I'm crossing the street. But can I compare the two? And if by Moshit, you're going to be Chayiv, which you are. So do we say the same thing regarding Zarek, that I would be Chayiv as well? And this is now the two ways of presenting the Machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and the Chacham. Continuing in the Gemara, Amar Rav Yosef, Amilsi, Yibayle, L'Rav Chista, Upashtin, Niyale, Rav Hamnuna, Meha. The following question was asked to Rav Chista. Rav Hamnuna gave the answer, and he gave the answer from the following. Mirishus Yachim, L'Rishus Yachim, V'over, B'Rishus Rabbi Matzma. Now here we have a Braisa, and it's depicting the exact scenario that we're describing right now, where I'm going from one Rosh Hashanah to another. I'm going through a Rosh Hashanah, but the feature element of this Braisa, it says, Rosh Hashanah Atzma. I'm going through the actual Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Kiva Mechayv, Chachamim Pochim. Now, the Gemara picks up on this word, Atzma. Mitakam Rosh Hashanah Atzma, Pshita Lamata Mi'asara, Pligi. So it's clear now that we're talking about that you're within Ten Tfachim, because we're going through the actual Rosh Hashanah. Uvemai. Now, if we're talking about where I am carrying the item, so there is no distinction to be made between being within 10 or being above 10. As we already established, and we're saying it now again, this idea that if I'm walking through Rosh Hashanah, even though the item I'm holding is above 10 tefachim, but because I'm walking in the Rosh Hashanah, and one's going to be chayiv, B'nei Kahas, that's how they carried. El Alav B'Zorek. So the Gemara says that the case of the Braisa must be throwing. Ulamata Me'asara Hu D'Mechayev, Lamala Me'asara Lo Mechayev. So the now what comes out is that we have just explained that the case has to be a case of Zrika. It has to be within 10 Tfachim because we said in the Rosh Hashanah the Matzma. Now with all that stated, here comes the point. The entire debate now between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim is on the principle of Kluta. So the debate is surrounding the whether or not we accept the principle of Kluta or whether we do not accept the principle of Kluta. And that means to say that if I threw it above 10 Tfachim, like a lob, where it goes from one Rosh Hashanah to another, but over the airspace of the Rosh Hashanah, under those circumstances, everyone would be in agreement that you would be Pater, because we don't learn out the Malacha of Zorek from the Malacha of Moshit. Now, the Gemara points out that this argues with Rav Elazar, Damar Rav Elazar Mechayv Hayu Rabbi Akiva Afilu Lamala Miyud. That Rabbi Akiva says that you're Chayv even if you throw it above 10. V'hai Diktani Rosh Hashanah Matzma. Now, if that's true, why would the Braisa say Rosh Hashanah Matzma through the Rosh Hashanah La'adicha Kochad Rabbanan? To show the strength of the Chachamim Shita. Meaning that the Chachamim say that even though you're through the Rosh Hashanah, but the Chachamim dismiss the idea of Kluta Kemisha Huncha. Upligid Rav Chilke Bar Tuve. Now the argues on the position of Rav Chilke Bar Tuve, Damar Rav Chilke Bar Tuve, Tok Shlosha Divrei Kol Chayiv. Look, if I threw an item and it was in three tfachim of the ground, so one's going to be Chayiv. And as we all know, when something is within proximity of another item, within proximity of three tfachim, so we have the principle of Lavud. Lavud tells us as if the two are now connected. So if the item was so close to the ground, it was within three tfachim of the ground, that is considered a Hanacha. Now, above 10 Tfachim, everyone would say that you'd be Pater, because you're not within the airspace of the Rosh Hashanah. Now, within 3 to 10, that's the Machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, and this is predicated on the principle of Kluta, meaning that Rabbi Kiva subscribes to the principle of Kluta, and the Chachamim do not agree to the principle of Kluta. Tanya Amehacher, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, B'Sokim al Divrei HaKol Chayiv, that within 3, everyone says that you're going to be Chayiv. L'mala Miyun Eino Ela Mishum Shvus. Above 10, it is rabbinically prohibited, but one did not violate the malacha. Now, if it happens to be that the two private properties, the two Rishus HaYachid, are yours, so then it's Mutta Lagamre. And from 3 to 10, Rabbi Kiva says that you're going to be Chayv, the Chachamim say that you're going to be Potter. So here, clearly, the Machlokas over here is predicated on Kluta. And so, what we have over here is a basic Machlokas amongst the Amoraim, exactly what is the debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. So some Amoraim, I'm just summarizing. Some Amoraim are of the opinion that when you're throwing an item through the airspace of the Rishus HaRabim, so do we apply the principle of Kluta, which is Rabbi Kiva, or do we not apply the principle of Kluta, which is the Chachamim? And that's one way to frame the debate. Or the other way to frame the debate is that no, that when you're throwing through the Rishus HaRabim, everyone subscribes to Kluta, and the only debate is now going to be if I throw it above 10 Tefachim, above the airspace of the Rishus HaRabim, where the question now becomes, do I compare the Malacha of Zorek to that of Moshit? The Gemara now is just for a moment going to spend time on something the Braisa just taught us, which is that if the two Rishus HaYachid belong to you, so then it would be Mutter Legamre, Lema Tabit Yufta Derav. The Gemara says, now presumably this is going against the Shita Rav, Deid Mashnei Batim, Mishnei Tzidiv Rishus HaRabim. Rav Baravuna Amar Rav Asal Lizrok Mizelezeh, Ushmul Amar Mutter Lizrok Mizelezeh. So a debate between Rav and Shmuel, this is the Gemara in Erevin. A debate between Rav and Shmuel as to whether or not one is allowed to throw from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid, not having traversed through the Rishus HaRabim. So the assumption is that both Rishus HaYachid belong to you. And seemingly over here we have a debate. And if we are right in the way we just understood the Braisa, isn't that going against the Shita of Rav? So the Gemara says, no. V'lami ukim nalai hikigon demid lechad umasasechad. Dezim nanaf of asul isuye. So the Gemara says, no, the Gemara in Erevin, the question over there, is slightly different than our question over here, and really has no bearing on our discussion. The Gemara over there was describing a scenario where I'm throwing from one balcony to another, but they're from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid. They both belong to me, however, they are not at the same level. I'm trying to throw from one balcony which is higher than the other balcony. So there, the chances of me actually getting to the other balcony are significantly decreased because they are not on the same level, not on the same plane. And if that happens, the chances are is that it's not going to hit the destination of the other balcony. It's probably going to go down into the Rishus HaRabim. And then I will be tempted to go into the Rishus HaRabim, pick it up, and go into Rishus HaYachid. So for that concern, so the Chachamim, Rav is of the opinion that the Chachamim banned that activity. But if we're talking about two balconies that are in alignment with one another and share the same height, so under those circumstances, so that's what our Bryce is dealing with, and the Bryce is not concerned that the item is going to fall. It is unlikely that such an event will happen. And now the Gemara also wants to just for a moment speak about this idea that when a item is within three tefachim, so we employ the principle of lavud. Where do we see that from? Where does that come from? So what the Gemara tries to do is, at this point in time, is give a svara. Why should it be that anything within three tefachim is considered as if it's connected to the ground? So the Gemara's first argument is, well, you know, the ground is not perfectly level. Nature is such where when you have a ground, so it's not like nobody came over with a carpenter's plane and started leveling the ground, making it perfectly smooth and flat. And so therefore, what has to be is that we have to assume there are bumps and ridges within the road, and so there is going to be a margin of error, and the Gemara assumes that it's within three tefachim. So the Gemara says, Yahachi Gimel Nami. So the Gemara says, I'm not buying that as an argument, because what's the difference then with just being under three tefachim and the actual three tefachim itself? Meaning, why are we drawing the line necessarily at just below three tefachim? And v'su ha'adidana m'shal shetvaz melamal lamata im hein gavoin min ha'ari shlosh tefachim psula ha'pachos migamuk shera. So the Gemara says, and let's learn together, let's go back to Masechta Sukkah, and let's learn a little bit about the Hilchos Mechitza of a Sukkah. And the Mechitzas of a Sukkah demand that the walls of the Sukkah have to be close to the ground. So that means to say that if I'm lowering the walls and they are three tefachim above the ground, no good. If they're within three tefachim of the ground, that's good. What does that have to do with an uneven ground? Meaning you're putting the walls above the ground. We're assuming, of course, that the ground itself is perfectly level. And over here we're making a distinction with between being three tefachim versus being less than three tefachim. And if the issue is a ground that's simply not level, so over here we're just simply lowering the walls. This has nothing to do with an unbalanced ground, with an unlevel ground. So Hasam Hainu Taima, so the Gemara says, when it comes to Sukkah, that's a different issue. Taima Mishum Davila Mechitza Shagdim Bokeba. So the Gemara says, yeah, but when it comes to Sukkah, you know that the Sukkah has to be a partition. It has to be the kind of partition where no goats can get underneath, right? Young goats, kids, can get underneath. And so therefore, with an airspace of three tefachim between the wall and the ground, so therefore the Gedim could be Bokenbo, and therefore the wall doesn't serve as a partition. And by Sukkah, we need a partition. The Gemara says, I'm not even buying that as an explanation. So the Gemara says, okay, but you explain the halacha regarding all the halachas of the wall as it's proximate to the ground. What about the halachas of the wall and going above? A number of places where we talk about connections between the wall and the schach above it, and it has to be within three tefachim under certain circumstances. And meanwhile, that has nothing to do with kids getting underneath the wall. So the Gemara says that when it comes to the halachas of Lavud, it is halach l'moshe m'Sinai. Both in terms of the halachas of Hanacha, which is our topic of discussion here in the 11th parak of Shabbos, also in the walls of Sukkah, where we have this halacha that it has to be within three tefachim of the ground. And under certain circumstances, it has to be three tefachim of the tzchach. That's also halach l'moshe m'Sinai, meaning simply put, the halachas of Lavud is halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. So it's not predicated on a svara. Tanu Rabbanan, we are on the bottom of Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph. And so far over the course of this morning, the topics that we've covered is the Mekoshesh, the identity of the Mekoshesh, the propriety of whether or not it is proper to identify the Mekoshesh, and then, from there going forward, a lengthy analysis of our Mishnah in terms of the Machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim when throwing from a Rishus Yachid to another Rishus Yachid with the Rishus Rabbim in the middle, exactly what are the parameters of that throw? Was that throw within ten tefachim of the ground? Was that throw above 10 tefachim of the ground? And what exactly are the issues being debated? The principles of Kluta, the idea that maybe we should compare the Malach of Zorik to the Malach of Moshit, that has been our preoccupation over the course of this daf. We continue now on the bottom of the Amud, about 6 lines from the bottom, 5 lines from the bottom, Tanu Rabbanan. Mirushus HaRabim, Lirushus HaRabim, Virushus Yachid Be'emsa, Rabbi Mechai V'Chacham and Pochim. Going from one Rishus HaRabim to another with the Rishus HaYachid in the middle. This is the inverse scenario as what we've been discussing up until now. So Rebbe says that one would be Chayv and the Chachamim say that you're Pater. So here, let's just for a moment, let's visualize. So you're starting off in one Rishus HaRabim, and there is a street running parallel to the one you are right now, right? If you want to imagine this better, it's like there's these massive highway side by side, right? At one point, a little bit north of us, the turnpike in 95 are running pretty much side by side. And what you do is you throw from one Rishus HaRabim to another with a Rishus HaYachid in the middle, and you're throwing it now through the house. So from one highway to another highway with a house in the middle. So under those circumstances, Rebbe says that your Chayv, the Chachamim say that you would be Pater. Okay, now, Rav Shmuel D'Amitav Vayelo Chayv Rebbe Ela Rishus HaYachid Mekura. Now, Rav and Shmuel now are going to be giving more parameters to this scenario. When Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi says that you're chayev, he's talking about where you're throwing it through a house, and specifically where the house has a roof over the top of it. The Amrina Besa Kamand Demal Yadame. So over here, what we're saying is that we're halachically, here's how we look at the house. The house is as if it is filled up. Kamand Demal Yam. If you take a look at Rashi on the bottom of the Amud, Rashi writes, Mitokshu Choshech Umale Hevla. Meaning by virtue of the fact that the house now is enclosed, and not only all four sides, but it has a roof overhead. So now it gives the house atmosphere. I mean that here literally. Physically, there's atmosphere now to the house. And so it's as if now when you're throwing through the house, it's as if it is landed in the house. And then when it leaves the house and it goes into the Rishus HaRabim, so now it's going from the house into the Rishus HaRabim. Now, I know this sounds very similar to the principle of Kluta, but over here, there's a little bit more substance over here to the principle of Kluta, because Kluta is telling us that when it's going through the airspace of the Rishus HaRabim, there are no enclosures. There's no sides, there's no top. It's simply a Rishus HaRabim. Irishus Rabim, in terms of dimensions, only is measured in terms of the width of the street. But there are no walls, and there's certainly no top. So, but here we're talking about a Rishus Yachid, where there are walls, and now as we're clearly outlining, there is a roof over the top. So it's a little bit more than Klutza in terms of being able to see the house as being a physical entity, and as the item is going through the house, it now is making rest in the house because the house is more atmospheric, if you will. So the Gemara says that is Rav Shmuel's understanding of this debate. Aval she'ena makor lo. But if the house does not have a roof over the top, and now the house is missing this atmosphere, so then we do not say that Rebbe would say that you would be chayev. Am Rav Chana, Am Rav Yehuda, Am Rav Shmuel, Mechayev Ayah Rebbe Shtayim. Now the Gemara says over here, let's think about this. When I'm throwing from one Rishus HaRabim to another Rishus HaRabim with the Rishus HaYachid in the middle, so how many karbonos are you going to have to bring? So the Gemara quotes in the name of Shmuel that you're going to be subject to bringing two carbon chatases. Achas mishum atzava, achas mishum achnasa. Because if you think about it, one of you violated both hotzah and hachnasa. Now it happens to be not in that order. Meaning you're starting in the Rishus HaRabim and you're throwing it through the house, that's hachnasa. And then went from the house back into another Rishus HaRabim, not back, but it continued further into another Rishus HaRabim, and that is now Hotzah. And so what he's arguing is that you're chayav two karbanos. Now, as we think about this, we realize, wait one second. On one hand, the Gemara is right. On the other hand, doesn't seem like the Gemara is right. Because even though it's true that you violated Hotzah and Achnasa, but what did we learn in yesterday's daf? The Gemara now opens up with this next question. I don't understand as we turn to the Amud Beis. Wait one second. To say that you're chayav too, that means to say that over here there is Hotzah, which is Yav Malacha. There is Achnasa, which is the Tolada. And so you have an Av, and it's Tolada. Now, what did we learn in yesterday's Av? That if a person violates an Av and it's Tolada, a machlokus amongst the Tanayim. Shitas Chachamim is that you're chayav only one carbon. Shitas Rebbe Eliezer in yesterday's daf is your chayv two. Where does Rebbe stand on this issue? Well, if you're telling me that Rebbe says that you're chayv two, so you're aligning Rebbe now with the shita of Rebbe Eliezer, and the Gemara says, I don't think you're right about that. V'atanya, in fact, I think you're dead wrong about that. The Gemara now makes the case. Rebbe Amar Dvarim Hadvarim Eila Hadvarim Eila Lamentas Malacha Shanemer Lamoshe B'Sinai. We go back now to the seventh parak of our Masechta, where there Rebbe says, how do I know there are 39 malachos? So he generates it based on a gematria. Rare is the time in throughout Shas that we are learning halacha based on a gematria, but here's one of those rare moments. The word Ela in gematria, Aleph Lamed Hey, comes out to a total of 36. Now, obviously, that's three short of 39, but we're also going to be darshing the word Hadavarim. The word Devarim means items, which are two, because we assume always the smallest, and the Hey in front of it, so that's one more. So that's 1 plus 2 plus 36. That gets us to 39 malachas. Shenem lamoshe b'sinai. And what is instructive about the idea that there are 39 malachas? That means to say that there is only a maximum possibility of 39 carbon chatuses that can be brought for one Shabbos. Because as many malachas as you violate, if you violate an av and it's tolada, you're only going to be chayv for the av and not for the tolada. That is what is instructive about the number 39. What comes out clearly now is that Rebbe is not going to be Mechayev, a Tolada B'Makamav. And with that stated, so it can't be that Rebbe in our scenario is going to have the person being Chayev two carbon chatzeses. Because as he's throwing from one Rishus HaRabim to another with a Rishus HaYachid in the middle, with a house in the middle, and you're throwing it through the house, and it's true that you violate the Malach of Hachnasa and the Malach of Hotza'ah, but you're not going to be Chayev two carbon chatzeses because that is a Tolda Hachnasa, B'makum av the hotza'ah, and so therefore you're not going to be chayv two according to Rebbe. So the Gemara says so case closed, nothing really to talk about. You're only going to be chayv one according to Rebbe. So Amalei Rebbe Yosef mar ahamas nilav kashalei. So Rebbe Yosef says it's so funny. You learned out the chayv shtayim. You learned it on the brisa that we just learned, but then you ran into a brick wall. The Rebbe v'kashalei the Rebbe the Rebbe anan ad Rebbe Yehuda masisin. However, we learned the Chayiv Shtayim, right? That was a memra of Shmuel, but we learned it on a different scenario. And so therefore, we're not going to run into a brick wall. We're learning it on the halacha of Rabbi Yehuda. Let's learn together the halacha of Rabbi Yehuda, d'tanya. Mirishus yach l'rishus harabim v'avar arba amos b'rishus harabim. Rabbi Yehuda mechai v'chacham in pochim. So here the scenario looks like this. I start with the item in the Rishus Yachid and I throw it out into the Rishus Rabin. So one malacha is, I violate, is Hotzah. Throwing an item from the Rishus Yachid to the Rishus Rabin, but wait, we're not done. Then what happens is that as it's thrown into the Rishus Rabin, it then traverses four Amos in the Rishus Rabin. That's Mavir Dala Amos Rishus Rabin. Now we learned yesterday, Hilchus HaGemirila, that we have a Lacha Moshe Misinai that when you're Mavir Dala Amos Rishus Rabin, you're going to be Chayv as well on Shabbos. And so here we have a scenario where you violate now two forms of Hotzah. One Hotzah, going from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabim, and you also are being Mavir. Now in the Braisa, we have two Shitas. The Shita of Rabbi Yehuda is that you're Chayiv, and the Shita of the Chachamim say that you're Pater. Now, at this point in time, it is open season in terms of the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. When he says you're Chayiv, does he mean that they're going to carry with it two liabilities? And if you're done b'shogeg, you're going to be chayv two karbonchatos? Or did Rabbi Yehuda mean that you only chayv one karbonchatos? And then when it comes to the chachamim, when he says pater, does that mean you're pater legamrei? Or does pater over here mean that you're pater only from one of the violations, but not from both violations? So it's unclear, and the Gemara now is going to try to make clarity on this point. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel Mechayv, I'm Rabbi Yehuda Shtayim. Achaz mishum hotzava, achaz mishum ha'avara. And so now we start off with Shmuel's memra, which is that when Rabbi Yehuda, now here we were trying to learn it back on Rabbi, but we ran into a problem because Rabbi is not going to be Mechayev a Toldo b'makomav. But now we're saying within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda is not Rabbi. Rabbi Yehuda is Rabbi Yehuda Eli, a different Tana, slightly earlier than that of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. So Rabbi Yehuda says that you're Chayev Shayim, one because of Otsan, the other because of Havara. Because let's take the following into consideration. If Rabbi Yehuda Shita is that you're Chayv 1, where does that put the Chachamim? Well, the Chachamim obviously arguing. If Rabbi Yehuda says 1, the Chachamim obviously are saying 0. But the Gemara says, but I can't entertain 0. So the Gemara says, but how could it be 0? You threw an item from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabbim. You did Hotza'ah. And then on top of that, it also rolled another four amos. Fine, but you did hotza. How can the chachamim say 0? So we have to say that according to the chachamim, you're chayv 1. And then when Rabbi Yehuda says that you're chayv, who's arguing on the chachamim, it must mean that that Rabbi Yehuda says that you're chayv 2. This is right now the Gemara's proposal. Mimai. The Gemara says, okay, how do I know that? The Gemara says, I'm going to try to argue that the Rabbi Yehuda's position is that you're chayev one, and the Chachamim's position is that you're chayev nothing. Because here is your intention when you threw the item out of the house. I'm throwing the item out of the house, and I want it to rest immediately upon exiting the house. And now, what is the debate? Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm going to include the Kamishu Huncha. So, and the debate between the two looks like this. According to Rabbi Yehuda, I said clearly that I want the item to rest as immediately as it leaves the house. Now it doesn't, and it goes another four amos. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're going to be chayev, and the reason why you're going to be chayev is for the following. Because he subscribes to the principle of kluta. Kluta tells us that the moment it leaves the house, even though physically it didn't rest, but the halacha allows us to view it as if it has rested immediately. And so therefore, your intent was that it should rest immediately upon exiting, and halachically it did. Now, it's so interesting that a halachic reality can become your intention, because you clearly wanted it to land immediately upon leaving. Since the halacha says that it does so, based on the principle of kluta, so now we're saying that becomes now a satisfaction of your intention. Admittedly, that's so interesting, because if he asked a person, what did you want it to do? He would say, I wanted it to physically rest. Okay. But nevertheless, that is Rabbi Yehuda Shita. And according to the Chachamim, no. Meaning they don't subscribe to the principles of Kluta. And therefore, it didn't physically rest and it didn't rest. And that's why the only way that one is liable on Shabbos is if you do what you intended to do, and this was not your intention. Your intention wasn't that it be halachically resting, and according to the Chachamim, they don't even subscribe to Kluta. So it didn't rest at all as it left the house. Aba atalada b'makom av lo mechayiv Rav Yehuda. The Gemara says, and now, the reason that Rabbi Yehuda now is chayiv is because of this principle of Kluta. And when Rabbi Yehuda says that you're chayiv, you're really going to be chayiv one. And the Gemara now is arguing that Rabbi Yehuda would not be chayiv two, because why would you be chayiv two based on the principles of Tolada b'makom av? Meaning you have over here Hotzal, which is the Av Malacha. You have also being Mavridala Amos, which is a Tolada, but you're not going to be chayiv two because that is considered a Tolada b'makom av. And Rabbi Yehuda is not going to be chayiv. So this is now the Gemara's proposal, where instead of Rabbi Yehuda being Chayiv 2 and the Chachamim being Chayiv 1, we just dropped it down now to Rabbi Yehuda being Chayiv 1 and the Chachamim say you're Pato Legamri. And we just gave explanation in terms of how that could be. So the Gemara says, Lo Sakadacha. The Gemara says, I'm not buying it. The Tanya, because we do have the following Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda Mosif as a Shovit v'hamidaktik, Amr lo Shovit hariyu b'chal mesach medaktik hariyu b'chal oreg. And so going now to the weaving process, Rav Yehuda adds two malachos. He adds the malacha of Shovit and he adds the malacha of Medaktik. Now, in terms of setting up the loom, so that is Mesach, and Rav Yehuda says that Mesach and Shovit, even though they're both part of setting up, he separates the two, and you can see Rashi for a more descriptive explanation of what exactly is Shovit as opposed to Mesach, but basically setting up the loom, two parts to it, and Rav Yehuda adds that to the malachas. And medaktek, and now in the actual weaving process, so you're taking some sort of tool or instrument in order to make sure that the strings are straight and aligned. That's the process of medaktek. And even though that's part of the weaving procedure, Rav Yehuda adds that also as a malacha. And the Chachamim say to Rav Yehuda, I don't know why you'd be adding that. Shovit haru b'chal mesach, medaktek haru b'chal oreg. Shovit is just simply part of the setting up of the loom, and medaktik is just simply part of the actual weaving process. Okay, good. Now, we have already heard this before back in the seventh perek. What exactly is going on over here? What is the dynamics of this debate between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim? My love, the avdin l'tarvaya b'hadei adadei. So the Gemara is suggesting is that here's what I think happens, is that you're doing both of these activities, meaning you're doing shovet and you're doing mesach, or you're doing medaktik and you're doing oreg. And Rabbi Yehuda says, look, the Shovet is really a Talada. But Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that you're going to be Chayv both for the Talada and the Av. And the Gemara now is trying to argue, what do we see over here? That Rabbi Yehuda does, in fact, subscribe to this idea that if I do an Av and it's Talada, I'm going to be Chayv too. The Gemara says, I don't think that's Pshat at all. Mimai, Demel Olam Da'abdilu L'chuda V'Halachuda Rabbi Yehuda Talada B'Makam Av L'Am Chayv. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda really is of the opinion that you're not chayv a tolada b'makom av. Uveha kemiflegi. And the debate over here revolves around the following. Rabbi Yehuda savar hani avos ninu. Rabbi Yehuda is adding shovet and medaktek to the list of malachos. And we already made this point back in the seventh perek. And it seems to be that Rabbi Yehuda is not capping the malachos to 39. Right? Seems to be that way. But that's fine. In other words, then he's adding these as avos. And Rabban and Savri, Hani Talados Nenu. And the Chachamim say, no, these are not Avos Malachos, these are Talados, these are subcategories. And now if you look back at the wording of the Braisa, it really fits in well with the wording of the Braisa, where Shovet Harehu Bechlal Mesach, Shovet is incorporated in a Mesach, and Medaktik Harehu Bechlal Oreg, and Medaktik is incorporated in Oreg. Meaning that the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing in terms of where do they belong in the organizational chart of Malachos. Rabbi Yehuda putting them as Avos, and the Chachamim saying, no, they're not Avos, they're rather Tolados. Fine. So, and right now, the Gemara has just given voice to the idea that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're not going to be Chayv a Tolada b'makom av, and so therefore, going all the way back now to our discussion of a person throwing an item from the Rishus Yachid to the Rishus Rabbim, and on top of that, it also traverses four Amos in the Rishus Rabbim, where there now you violated the Av of Otzah, and you violated the Tolada of being Mavidal Amos Rishus Rabbim, and Rabbi Yehuda says that you're Chayev. So if we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda is not Mechayev a Tolada by Makamav, so it puts the maximum number of Chiyuvim that one could be Chayev in that case to just simply one. And according to the Chachamim, we disagree. So if the Rabbi Yehuda is saying one, and the Chachamim say you're Pater, that means the Chachamim are at zero. And so now, I know that was a very long and complex route that we just took, but basically the Gemara now has just argued that now the way to understand the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is that Rabbi Yehuda says chayv mean chayv one, and the Chachamim say your pater means your pater na, your pater legamre. Teda, going back to the Gemara now. Diktan Rabbi Yehuda Mosif, Iyamar Bisham Avos, my Mosif, Mosif Avos. The Gemara is just simply going to go back now to this idea of what Rabbi Yehuda is doing in terms of adding medaktik and adding shovet. So the Gemara says, look, he's using the word Mosif. He's adding because he's adding Avos. Iyamar Talada, my Mosif. And if we're talking about where he's understanding to be a talada, the word mosif seems to be inappropriate. It marnami rabba v'rav Yosef dar mitavai lo chayv rav Yehuda ela achas. And now this pshat that we just offered in the Braisa is in fact corroborated by both Rabba and Rav Yosef. That when Rebbe says that you're chayv, what Rebbe means is that you're chayv one. Because the malacha of hotzah is an av, the being mavid al amos is a talada, and Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that you're not going to be mechayev a tolada b'makomav, and therefore you're only going to be chayev one. Whereas the Chachamim would say that you're chayev none at all. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda Rav Ashi l'may desal gadaita mikar d'mechayev haya Rabbi Yehuda shtayim. The Gemara says, okay, but can we just go back for a moment? Okay, we basically now have concluded that the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in the case of throwing an item from the Rishus Yechid to the Rishus Rabbim, and on top of that, it also went four amos in the Rishus Rabin, and we have Rabbi Yehuda being Mechayev one and the Chachamim being Patalagam, right? The Gemara says that's fine. But I'd like to go back for a moment to what we originally entertained. The idea that Rabbi Yehuda says that you're Chayev two, the Gemara says, I don't understand that. Ilahacha kabayla, lahacha lo kabayla. Ilahacha kabayla, lahacha lo kabayla. Let's ask the guy before he threw the item, where did you want the item to land? Whatever his answer is going to only limit the act to one violation. Let's say he said, I want the item to land immediately after it leaves the house. Fine. So on the act of, and as we already explained, Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to Kluta, which means that the moment it leaves the house, it's as if it rested right there. That's fine. So you violate the Malach of Otsah. The fact that it goes another four amos, that wasn't part of your intention. And so therefore, how can we even have entertained, we did, but how could we have entertained the idea that you're going to be chayv for dala amos b'rishus harabim? That wasn't your intention. And let's say you ask the guy, well, where did you want to throw it? He says, I want to not only throw it out of the house, but I want to go four amos afterwards. Okay, so but then you're only going to be chayv on the act of hotzah because you didn't want the item to land immediately after it left the house. The fact that it did, either in physical terms or in halachic terms, the fact that it did wasn't your intention. You wanted to land in the distance of four amos outside the house. So why would you be chayev then for the act of going from the house to the immediate outside when that wasn't your intention? So the Gemara is basically wondering, where do we even entertain the idea, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that you're chayev too? So the Gemara's answer is, Amar Leh, Ba'omer kol makom shetirse tanuch. Well, it could very well be that if you asked him, he says, I really don't care. Meaning, as long as it leaves the house, wherever it lands, I'm going to be happy with that. That would be the scenario in which one would be chayev both in the point immediately after the house and in the point of four amos after the house as well. Under those circumstances, Rabbi Yehuda would say that you're chayev, and that's at least how we could have entertained the idea that Rabbi Yehuda is going to be mechayev shtayim. But all of that is predicated on the principle of Rabbi Yehuda being mechayev a tolada b'makomav, but as the Gemara has now concluded, Rabbi Yehuda is not mechayev a tolada b'makomav, so it's simply just a question of how we could have entertained it, but when all said and done, we know that Rabbi Yehuda is not mechayev a tolada b'makomav, so when the Rabbi Yehuda says that you're chayev, he meant really that you're chayev achas, and then when the Chachamim say you're pater, they meant pater legamre. Let's quickly recap. The first part of today's daf, we dealt with the Mekoshesh. And the question that we dealt with is, what exactly did the Mekoshesh do? Yesterday we asked the question of why is that information important to us, meaning it's historical, and why go over something that has no halachic relevancy to us? So yesterday the Gemara asked the question, the Gemara gave an answer in terms of halachic relevancy. Who the Mekoshesh was, Rabbi Akiva identified him. The Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseru was so upset in terms of identifying him. He felt that Rabbi Akiva did not have the right to do so. Rabbi Akiva had a gzeira shava, which he felt meant that it's as if the Torah itself was Megala. Similarly, did Aaron get Saras? Rabbi Akiva said yes. And again, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseru says, please, let's not go in that direction because the Torah didn't say so. So why would you say so? Either you're right and speaking and saying something about a tzaddik, or you're wrong and just as bad saying something about a tzaddik. And again, Rabbi Kiva felt that the psukim do speak it out very clearly. And then the Gemara went on to discuss a couple of other ideas. Choshe b'ksherim, person who is suspects others of wrongdoing and it's unfounded. So the person who was choshed is going to be suffering. And quickly the Gemara went through neis b'soch neis. The big discussion in today's daf regards the Mishnah and the scenario where you're throwing from one reshus hayachid to another with a reshus harabim in the middle. And Rabbi Kiva says you're chayv and the chachamim say you're pater. And a lengthy discussion in the Gemara, what exactly was that throw? Where did that item go through the Rishus HaRabim? Did it go through the Rishus HaRabim, meaning the halachic airspace of the Rishus HaRabim, within 10 fachim of the ground, or did it go above the Rishus HaRabim? A major debate amongst the Amorayim, and then that debate is also going to be informative in terms of what the issues are. What exactly are they debating? Are they debating on the principle of Kluta? Kluta Kamishon Chadamya? This idea, this big idea, that when an item is going through the airspace of a halachic domain, it's as if it rested in that airspace. That is the principle of Kluta. And maybe that is the basis of the argument between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. Or the other possibility is that they all subscribe to the idea of Kluta, but if I'm throwing it above 10 tefachim, am I able to compare the malacha of Zorek to the malacha of Moshe, which we explained in yesterday's daf? That was the big part of the Amud Aleph. And then the Amud Beis, well, really starts on the Amud Aleph, starts on the bottom side of Zion Amud Aleph. The discussion of where I'm throwing an item from a Rosh Hashanah to a Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah in the middle. And over here, a similar scenario using the principle of Besa Kamanda Malya Dame, as if the house is filled up. And therefore, you're going to be chayv for throwing it through the house. Under those circumstances, Rebbe says that you're chayv. And Shmuel teaching us that Rebbe says that you're chayv shtayim, but the Gemara says, but that can't be because the two malachas are hotzah and achnasa, and achnasa is a subcategory, it's a talada of hotzah. So that can be. So what we did on the Amud Beis is that we went through the halacha of Rebbe Yehuda, where Rebbe Yehuda has a scenario where I'm throwing an item from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabim, and on top of that, it also rolls or it's thrown another four amos in the Rishus Rabim, where there Rebbe Yehuda says that you're chayv. And a lengthy discussion on the Amud Beis that when Rabbi Huda says that you're chayiv, does he mean that you're chayiv shtayim? Gemara ultimately dismisses that because Rabbi Huda, we know, is not mechayiv atolad ma'makamav. And so when Rabbi Huda says that you're chayiv, you're really only chayiv one. But a lengthy discussion on the Amud Beis in terms of at least entertaining the idea that Rabbi Huda, under those circumstances, is going to be mechayiv shtayim.